go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 84 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. How much do you squat is a question I often ask to strangers when I meet them the first time or when I'm introduced to somebody, again, for the first time. That throws people off a little bit because when you start talking about lifting weights, usually the first question from one bro to another is, how much do you lift? Or maybe it's, how much do you deadlift? Or what's your mile pace? But how much do you squat does not get asked from one stranger to another. That's usually from one lifting friend to another friend. I don't know why I brought that up. That was a question, actually, I was asking on stage. A little tip, or a little inside baseball or inside stand-up comedy here. I do a lot of crowd work, and I don't like to ask the question, so, what do you do for a living? Or how long have you two been dating? Sometimes I'll ask sometimes an inappropriate question, one of which is, what's your credit score? Or again, how much do you squat? Or what's another one I ask sometimes? Do you want to go on a Ferris wheel ride with the B-Man? Sometimes an awkward question where the person does not know the answer. They're thrown back a bit. But it makes for a fun little conversation, and you bounce it off from that person to another. Oh, you would like to go on a Ferris wheel. Oh, well the little the old geezer in the back, you're 75. Would you like to be our chaperone? Because I might get a little handsy with my babe here in the front row when we go on a date. So we're going to need a chaperone and have somebody stop me. Again, that can usually get some chuckles. I'll do something like that. You know, you gotta keep people on their tippy toes before they go. I have in my... what do you call it? In my phone. I have an Apple because I guess I don't care about those slaves in China. I know, my morals. I care, but I care about my phone more. Maybe we shouldn't hate on slave owners so much. I'm not going to take back that statement, but I do not promote it either. I'm just trying to make you laugh. I'm not going for office here. Where was I going? Oh, the phone. I have my notes app, and one of my notes apps is Show Ideas. And then if I come up with something, I use audio text because my hands hurt. So I use an audio text, and whatever that thing is, I'll talk about it in the opening of these episodes. That's where I come up with these topics right here. Or if I see something, it's there. And I've had one probably for about since before summer. So we're talking over 5 months ago, and I never bring it up because I always come up with something more more engaging or more interesting or more pointed. And this one, though, I'm going to get to it, all right? All right, B-Man, get to the point. Get to the point. Storytelling. Give us the punchlines. Garages. Have you ever thought about what a garage is? And I'm talking about a residential garage, that is. I'm not talking about like a car shop. Okay, get to it, Brian. Get to it. What is a garage? You know what a garage is. It is a room for your vehicles. One, two, or three vehicles, usually. Most people don't have a three-car garage. But let's say typical suburban neighborhood, rural area, you have a two-car garage. Nixon. Every time I do that, I think of Nixon. All right, get to the point. Two-car garage. And so a garage is a room for your vehicles. Think about how many people in the United States, in the world, that don't have their own bedroom. And there are so many families who are sleeping, I don't know, 6, 7, sometimes 10-plus if you have extended family sharing, a 2-3-bedroom apartment or house. And now there are some people in this country that have a room, not only for everybody who lives in the house, but they have a separate room for their vehicles that cost $50,000+. Whoa, a garage is such a flaunt to everybody who is poor and cannot afford housing that, you know, it gets overlooked. It really does. And right now, I just want to give a round of applause to everybody out there who has a garage. I do not. I do pay for parking, though, in a parking garage leveled in a city. But to have a garage, I don't think people think of that as wealth, but it really is. Again, it's a separate room attached to your house for your cars. And your car does not need shelter to survive. And yet, for many people, having a garage attached to their house is a must. That is the definition of wealth. And again, I ain't hating on anybody with a garage. I am jealous. I would love to have a garage to post photos of my erotic literature on the back wall as I pretend to change my oil. Again, I don't know how to change oil. There was a time where I tried to change the oil of a snowblower that I had, my mom had just bought, actually, but I'm the one who uses the snowblower. And I put too much oil in it, and it just smoked up my entire backyard and the entire neighborhood. I think some people actually called the fire department thinking there was a fire at the residence here. No, I just do not know how to change oil, not even of a car, but of a little dinky snowblower. That's how unmanly man the B-man is. But I make up for it in other ways to retain my manliness, or so I tell myself. Maybe I'm lying to myself. But the garage is a crazy concept. I wonder who thought of it. Yeah, your car. Let's protect it from the elements outside. So we'll give it its own room. That is, were there garages pre-World War I in America? I guess we'll never know, because I ain't going to research it. I don't care that much. I'm just, sometimes I look at a garage, I go, that's bigger than any apartment I've ever had. Maybe if Verbal Graffiti is ever successful, I'll be able to afford a 4-car garage. Let's keep it moving and talk about something I found on Reddit, because that's where I find content for this project that is called Verbal Graffiti. Remember to share with all the people you hate. Let's start doing those who know early internet with the email change, where it's like, I'm not really sure what it was called, but hey, you need to email this to somebody you know, and if not, they were going to wreck your computer. What was that? Email, chain gang. It was something, it was real, and it was terrifying. Early internet, wild. You download some porn, and you didn't know what you were downloading until it was finished downloaded, which usually took upwards of 45 minutes for a 45-second clip. Maybe that's why I come so quickly now. Moving along. This comes from the subreddit Change My View. CMV, again, Change My View. Traveling vacations are more stress than fun. My wife recently lamented that every time I take a vacation, I only want to do one thing: sit at home, watch television, and invest time into my hobbies. She said that everyone else she knows at least spends a good amount of time out of town once or twice a year, if not more. To me, that's just more work. Spending time packing, worrying about sticking to a budget, general safety, worrying about being so far away from any help, it fills me with dread. Besides, I rarely get any days to myself away from work to actually enjoy my life. The idea of leaving town just feels like work away from work for me. One of the things that I believe sparked this is that her sister and her sister's family recently spent 2 weeks in Italy and Greece. Their trip was expense paid. How'd they pull that off? And not something they would have been able to afford otherwise. And since my wife talks about going out of state for a vacation, to get anywhere worth traveling to, it would be a full day there and back. So it immediately takes 2 days away from our vacation time. And on top of that, I fear being in a foreign place, we don't want to leave the U.S., nor do we have the funds to afford flights or the time to invest in long trips. I can only take off a week at a time. I don't feel the experience outweighs the work, though I'm in the minority from how many of my friends and former classmates, congratulations on graduating, have spent time in different parts of the country and further. I was trying to contain my laughter as I read that because you do not have to change the B-man's mind because that is where my mind is at. And just so you know, if your mind is where the B-man's mind is at, that is usually a red flag because, as all you know, I do this project, verbal graffiti. I live in my mom's basement. I think in my retirement fund, I might have $36,000, which ain't too shabby, but it's nothing to retire on, especially when retirement is, it's not fast approaching, but it is approaching. So don't be so happy that I agree with you. That's not always for the best. I am also on vacation right now, a PTO. As you all know, I backlog my PTO days till the last half of the year, and I am not going on vacation. I have been staying home doing what this guy said he likes to do. He's sitting at home, working on his hobbies, watching TV. But again, to give me credit or to defend my stance, my hobby is this. And I was just thinking before I got on the mic tonight that I'm working more during my week off than I do when I'm actually working. And the reason is because when I work, all I think about while I'm at work is how to do the least amount of work possible, how to be the least productive without getting in trouble for my supervisors. But when I'm not working and I'm off the clock and I'm working on my projects, that is verbal graffiti and stand-up comedy, slinging smut jokes, I put so much effort and energy into it that it becomes exhausting. I lose sleep over it. And when I have a week off, I'm like, oh, wow, I got all this free time. But then I put more time into my reels, more time into editing, more time in about thinking about jokes to tell on stage or stories to tell or fucked up thoughts that, I end up filming at midnight like I am right now on a weeknight. So, yeah, I'm with you. And I am so, okay, how few vacations do I go on? I've taken one flight there and back in the last 10 years. And that was from Connecticut to Austin, Texas. And the only reason why I went on that flight is because it was for a bachelor trip with my best friend was engaged, getting married. So I was kind of forced to go on the trip. Otherwise, I would not have gone, but I enjoyed my time there. And so that was maybe 6 months ago. No. Over a year ago. So it's been maybe 18 months since I've been to Austin. I'm still recovering from jet lag. That's how negatively traveling affects the B-man. Still struggling with that 1 hour time difference that I'm trying to regain post-vacation there. It's exhausting. I'm right there with you. I get 7 days off from work. Two of those days are traveling. One there, one back. And again, I would love to go to Singapore. I've been thinking about going to Singapore. That flight, I'm a loser. I'm single. So when I take a flight, whoever's seated next to me, that's Russian roulette. And let's be honest, since we're in America, it's probably going to be a fatty who has no manners. So she's going to be listening to her earbuds so loud that I could hear the music coming from it. And she's going to be just munching on Lay's potato chips and fucking elbowing me. Like, hey, can you get out of the way? I gotta use the toilet because I drank two Coca-Colas that the stewardess gave me, but I know we're not supposed to use the word stewardess, but flight. All right, you get the idea. The flight is miserable. It's one day there. It's one day back. And 3 days into my vacation, I start thinking, ruminating about how my vacation is almost over. And the last 3 days of my vacation, really all that's on my mind is, wow, this vacation is almost already over. And I'm dreading having to get back on a plane and back to Connecticut. So yeah, vacations for me are miserable. I don't go on vacations. But again, this ain't about me. This is about you. And something about this post that I take away is that, see, your wife's sister, and so your sister-in-law and all her family, they took photos, they posted them to Instagram, your wife saw those photos, and was like, why can't we go on these vacations? And I swear to you, social media is the root cause of more divorces in this country than any infidelity. These broads, they see photos and stories of their sisters and their friends, and they post stories of in bikinis with tan lines, holding a pina colada, smiling as the sun sets behind them at golden hour. And your wife, she's staring at you sideways like, did I marry the right guy? Like, why is my sister, why are my friends going to all these exotic locations every quarter, four times a year? And yet I'm here stuck on a couch watching reruns of Big Bang Theory every evening. I think I've married the wrong person. I want a divorce. I swear to you, that's the cause of more divorces than any guy or any babe getting a little strange from the local watering hole. And that's what's happening here. I don't think your wife's going to leave it up because she does seem she's an NPC. If there's the imprint of both your butts on your couch from watching TV every night, she's not going to step out and leave you. So there's no worry about that. But what worries me about you is there was a common theme throughout your Reddit post, which is you're cheap as fuck. All you talked about is how your sister-in-law, she wouldn't have the money otherwise, and you'd have to budget if you went on vacation. Like, I know who you are. I know who you are. When you go out to eat with your wife at a restaurant, which is not very often, maybe a few times a year for anniversaries, weddings, birthdays, holidays, things like that, you're never going out on just a random Thursday. So those few times you go out to eat with your wife per year, you insist on sharing one appetizer. That way you can save money. And once you finish your main entree and the waiter comes like, would you like a dessert? You cut the waiter off before your wife can speak and say, no, thank you. We'll have the check, please. Your wife has never had a post-restaurant meal cappuccino because spending $10 over that, hell would freeze over before you allow that to happen because you're cheap as fuck. And I'm telling you, you got to stop being so cheap. And that comes from a reformed cheap artist. I used to be cheap as fuck like yourself. So what you got to do is stop going to Reddit and complaining about your sister-in-law and how much vacations suck, which they do, what you got to do is go out, work a few extra shifts, get a second job, a hustle as Uber Eats or Uber driver or an Amazon driver. Do something, a lifeguard. Do something so you can save up and some extra cash to bring your wife on a vacation because she deserves it. Think about when you got down on a knee and you proposed to your wife and you said you want to live the rest of your life with her. Think back to that moment when you were truly in love with her. She deserves that vacation. And as her husband, you have to give it to her. So earn that extra money and go to a vacation somewhere. And yeah, you're going to lose a few thousand dollars out of your retirement fund. And you're going to lose money out of your saving account. But when you really think about it, you're actually going to save money. Because you'll go on this vacation. And what it will do is it will shut your wife up. And what that will allow you to do is to live in peace. And otherwise, if you don't get that extra money, that side hustle, to raise money to go on that vacation, your wife is going to nag you and this is going to go on and on and on. And what it's going to do is cause you, the husband, to get an ulcer. Is this where you get ulcers right here? I think it's somewhere in the stomach or maybe it's up near the heart. Anyways, you're going to get that angst and that frustration and that nagging is just going to pound, pound, pound. It's going to calcify or whatever that word is. It's going to get in your stomach. It's going to cause you to have an ulcer and you're going to go to hospital and have surgery and overnight stay. So that's going to cost you more money than the actual vacation would. So save that money, go on a vacation, and in a weird way, it's going to save you money in the long run. So my mind was not changed because I was with you to begin with, and your wife is an NPC, and your sister-in-law, she can go suck a fat one. Let's go look at some photos. Episode 84, segment 2. Please, please, I'm begging you, on my knees, willing to suck you off. Please, send this episode. Did I just say I would suck you off? I take that back. I will not. There will be no sucking. Using my mouth this episode or in future episodes. Unless you have a clit. I'll suck the clit. All right. What I was going to say is please, please, please send this episode to your state representative, whoever that may be, and have he or she, I don't know, put it on public access? Or what do state representatives do? I don't know who mine is. I brought this up in previous episodes. I am trying to have more meaningful conversations with people, strangers, people I barely know. And this past week, I've had two. One was very enjoyable, and both of them were one-sided conversation. I met this gentleman, forget his name because my memory is Play-Doh, it's Gumby. He's a movie director in his mid-30s. He used to be in like a metal band and he was a drug addict. He was an alcoholic. He gave up alcohol 2 years ago. It's a shame, but good for him. And he was just telling me about his life and because he was talking about getting funding and he wants me or somebody's making a movie and they want me to be in it. And I'm worried about being in it because I do not know how to remember lines. When I listen to songs like Beatles songs, I've listened to them my entire life, and I do not know. I cannot recite the lyrics to "Let It Be." Lyrics and remembering lines. I can't do it. So these people, these creators, they want me in a movie for a small scene, and I'm like, dude, I can't remember the lines. So that is what it is. Anyways, we were talking to the guy was talking to me about his life, and I was asking him about how do you get funding for movies? And what's that like making a movie and not knowing how it's received until maybe, you know, 2-3 years later, once it, you know, it gets all put together and given to the public to watch. Because I do stand-up and I know right away, I get instant feedback. That joke is You know, I get that look like, oh, that joke didn't hit, or it's hitting the floor and the walls are shaking because that joke, pow, 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 it hit so hard. That dick joke hit the wall like a male porn star shooting his load. All right, you get the idea. But that's always curious to me about people who make movies. Everybody, where's the actors, the directors, the writers, videography, all the people who make movies, like, you don't really know whether it was a classic or dog shit until, you know, 18 months later, till it's released. And sometimes it's not even released. So how you process that as an artist, that does, I was asking him and he didn't really have much of an answer. He actually just said, yeah, you know, you make one and you try to get funding for the other and you just go. So, all right. So that was a short-lived 20-minute conversation. It was perfect. It was entertaining. His life was very, he had an eclectic life, you know, with drug addicts, music, movies. His girlfriend there was with him, who's kind of saved his life. And so it was very, it was a fulfilling 20 minutes. And then later, another time this week, I had a 3-hour conversation with this person, and I'll just leave it at that. And you ever have a conversation where the conversation is, I won't say it's miserable, but it's not enjoyable, and you're kind of stuck there, you're in it, and you don't know how to get out of it. And I should have done the Elaine Bettis from Seinfeld, and said something like, maybe the dingo ate your baby. That's my Australian accent. Maybe the dingo ate your baby. And just say something kind of fucked up to get out of conversation. I tried that. I started talking about flat earth, and the person gave me, again, a sideways look, and then the conversation went on. But it wasn't a conversation. It was just me listening to this person for 3 hours. And I know it was 3 hours because I was looking at a clock, my iPhone, and it was the third hour before the person said, I'm sorry, what do you do for a living? Hour number three. If you get to the third hour without asking that question, you need to have some self-reflection on yourself. And what? I talk too much. I am not curious enough about other people. Now, if you're the type of person who talks so much about yourself that it takes till the third hour to ask the most basic, boring interview question, what do you do for a living? What do you do for work? What do you do to make money? You're not the type of person that's going to have a lot of self-reflection because you're just not that type of person. So, you know, as I'm on this journey, man, 3 hours. And this is the second person in the last couple of years who has talked so much without asking just a basic, hey, how old are you? What do you do for a living type question? And I'm okay with that. I am a listener. I don't like to speak that much. I know how to keep a conversation going by peppering. You ask a question, the person you ask a question to answers the question. I make a statement about the person's answer, and then you kind of bounce back and forth. And that's how you go from asking questions and morph it into an actual conversation. But there was not a lot of bouncing back. And after a while, it became amusing to me. It became a carnival game. It's like, how long is this conversation going to go? Like, how long can this person talk about themselves? And it was very long. It was very long. And, I had to get going. You know, because I do have work in the morning, so I can't stay up till 2 a.m., but it's if I'm not doing stand-up that late, I want to be in bed. I want to be sleeping in the what do you call that? The fetal position I sleep in. Good to know. All right, moving along. Doing a lot of moving along. All right, this comes from the subreddit Petite Fitness. Still have a big chest. Oh, do you? This is just a rant. I'm tired of still having a big chest. My band size has gotten smaller, but the actual cup size is pretty much the same. Even when I was younger, I've had a big chest, so it's definitely genetics. It's the big thighs, small waist, a big chest combo. I've gotten a lot smaller everywhere else but my breast, and dang, I'm trying to be like one of them skinny women with flat chest, small legs that dresses cute. LMAO. Laugh my ass off. IDF, I don't know. Like, I do like having a big chest, but some days I just want to wear the sleeveless top. Are you trolling us? Is that what you're doing? Are you trolling all of us here at Verbal Graffiti? You got to be trolling us. You got to be shitting me. Because do you see that? Did you see that? That was God throwing his hands up in disgust. That you might be God's greatest creation. You have the perfect dimensions for a body. Thick thighs, tight waist, big bust line. Instead of complaining on Reddit, what you should be doing is acting like a Muslim and get on your knees and pray 5 times a day and thank God Almighty that he gave you his greatest creation, which is your body. That right now, Mr. Perfect, just reading your post, is peeking up. He's semi-stiff, kind of curious, wanting to see your body. We wish you posted photos of this thick thigh, small waist, big bust. See this? The curious thing about this post, and again, as we've done ad nauseum here at Verbal Graffiti, I am not an expert when it comes to the female anatomy, so bear with me. Bear with me with this one. Please do. Now, if you're wearing a sleeveless top as a babe, it seems to me, the B-man, that the bigger your breasts are, the more they stick out from your chest, the easier it is to wear a sleeveless dress, because the boobs would prevent the sleeveless top from sliding down. Now, if you're flat-chested and you happen to raise your arms, let's say you're reaching for a toilet paper at the grocery store, it seems that if you're flat-chested, it'd be very easy for the sleeveless top to slide down and show your ladyboy boobies to all the spectators that are there in front of you. So it seems to me that having being busty would be better serve for wearing a sleeveless top. Am I wrong? Please let me know down in the comments. So I don't know why, or maybe I'm wrong, because you're saying if you're heavy, or sorry, you're a top heavy lady, that wearing a sleeveless top dress is a no bueno for you. So that's odd. I find that peculiar. This also does bring up an extra, like an extra, see, it's funny because this is pretty common, right? You'll have a heavy set, a fatty babe who decides to lose weight. Hey, good for you. We're happy. All of us here at Verbal Graffiti are happy that you're taking your health serious. You're exercising, losing the IBSs, the IBs, the pounds, whatever those are called, the kilos. So we're happy that you're getting healthy. But this does happen to a lot of heavy set babes, right? They'll lose weight, but then they also lose their boobs. And that's such a shame, because when a fatty lady loses weight and she also loses her boobs, the boobs, they're atrocious. They begin to look like a cross between an Egg McMuffin and a Picasso painting. They're just the wrinkles, and they're flat. It's like a you know, like a birthday balloons attached to a mailbox, but it's like 3 days past the child's birthday, so the balloons start to deflate and those wrinkles near the balloon knot. Like, that's what a fat to skinny babe boobs look like. So, but you have retained your boobs, so this God has blessed you. Like, I don't know why you're complaining. Now, as a misogynist, self-proclaimed misogynist, I do this quite often. I will look at a fatty, right? An overweight babe, and I don't use that word malicious. I like the word fatty. You look at a fatty, and I have to discern, as a misogynist, are those boobs, like, does she have big boobs, or is the 70 pounds of overweightness propping her boobs up to look good in those photos that she takes for Instagram and the dating apps? Like, which is it? Is it real boob, or is all the extra weight propping it up? And that's what losing weight as a fatty babe, that's what it does. It is a test, because when you're a heavy set babe and you lose the weight, that is the test to determine whether those boobs were real, whether they stood on their own as big boobs, or if it was the processed food and soda pop that was propping those boobs up. Now, in your case, you passed the test, right? Those boobs remain. You passed the AP test. You should be given all the college credits for it. Congratulations, you have the big boobs. But not many a fatty babe are not as lucky. They'll lose the weight and they'll go from a D to a you know, an egg McMuffin, small B cups. So I have no idea why you're complaining. I should not have admitted how much of a misogynist I am, but I am. And this is Verbal Graffiti, and this backdrop is an attestment to my misogynism. Misogynism, is that a word? I don't know. I'm not going to look it up. Let's continue reading A Salesman's Wife by the famous author, John Lawrence. Again, we read two pages every episode. Tonight, we are starting on the top of page 35, if you are reading along. "You don't have to look away," he said calmly. "It's a natural reaction to look at someone's genitals." Pamela was stunned. He was obviously noted her quick glance at his genitals, and yet he was encouraging her to do so. "The human body is beautiful," he went on. "It is the most beautiful work of nature. We shouldn't be ashamed to admire anybody's body. I have been sitting here admiring yours for quite some time now. You're quite lovely, Miss Burns." "Thank you," she said quietly, her eyes still averted. "Now, why don't you look back and take a good look?" he said. "Don't be afraid. If you're too terrified to do such a simple thing, then my therapy won't be of much use. You must have courage." He's right, Pamela thought to herself. "I've got to stop being so foolish and fearful." Slowly, she turned and gazed directly at the bulge in his pants. He had spread his legs wider now and slumped his hips forward slightly so that she could have a full view. She found herself stunned at the sight of his sexual organs tightly encased in his slim trousers. They seemed to throb and glow before her eyes. She had never seen anything so beautiful in her life. She found herself gazing in near adoration of the doctor's preferred crotch. Her mind reeled in a drug haze thrilled by the obscene sight. "It's beautiful," she thought. "So beautiful. He's right. There's nothing to be ashamed of." "Oh, doctor," she said happily. "I feel so wonderful, and your body is so beautiful." Carlsberg smiled to himself, knowing that the euphoric effects of the drug were beginning to take effect. "Good, good," he said. "We're making progress already. Now we must go further." "Whatever you say," she replied. Her eyes traveled up to meet his, and they met. Her breath came faster and faster. He was the most mysterious man she had ever seen, so handsome and strange with his mustache and dark eyes. Yet he was warm and gentle, too. She was elated to discover that her mind was soaring like a bird in a clear blue sky, and her body was trembling with warm excitement. She wanted to drift into the doctor's arm and kiss him torridly on the lips, hold him, embrace him. What's happening to me? She thought nervously. What's happening to me? We must go on now, the doctor said, rising from the chair. Go suck a fat one.